We're still waiting for the release of police body camera videos in the police shooting death of Andrew Brown Jr., a black man, in North Carolina last month. Under that state's law, body camera videos are not public record. A judge is considering how much to release. Brown's family was allowed to see the video. They called his death an execution. The district attorney said that was false. And so the family wants the tape released so people can see for themselves what's on it. Our next guest, who is also black, says, don't. In fact, she wants more laws restricting videos of all kinds to just families of victims and courts. She asks, what's the purpose of sharing violent police videos anymore, other than to traumatize black communities? That's the headline of her impassioned essay calling for a moratorium on these videos. Alyssa Richardson is an associate professor of journalism at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School, author of Bearing Witness While Black, African American Smartphones, and the new protest, Hashtag Journalism. Professor Alyssa, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, what an interesting conversation. We also heard from colleagues of color. And I just don't want to see these videos. It's too much. I don't want them released. It's actually affecting me negatively. Now, Journalists are called upon to witness executions. You know, this is might be a part of your job. But can you tell us more about why you agree with them, what this is doing to see these videos endlessly to people of color?
Actually, what I've heard a lot from working journalists of color is that it is especially harrowing to have to go in every single day and view someone who looks like you being killed and then seeing that bandied about on television and prime time. And so it's become quite a sticking point for many journalists of color to not only have to report on these stories and interact with families in the most delicate way, but then have to process this as if their own safety is not insured. Yeah. And so in the essay, I'm really calling for us to reserve the right to look for families and juries. I'm asking that we put all our energies behind making sure that the public still has a right to film, and then that film be turned over to the families so that they can seek justice. And that in states where the footage is no longer considered part of the public record, as it is in North Carolina, that we try to overturn some of those, or perhaps even introduce legislature at the federal level that will mandate that these kinds of videos need to be released to the families and again, to their lawyers.
But not publicly. Look, you've said so much and so much that's interesting. I can hear people saying, wait, we fought so hard to get these videos out. And they actually played a role, for instance, in the trial of Derek Chauvin. I'm going to get to that, but I want to hear more about your feelings about what they're doing. Maybe for you, too. Is it the way they're played over and over? You say it's like a sporting event, like it's not sacred. I mean, you know, talk about that.
When African Americans die, we are so used to seeing that mediated in public spaces, even when violence is met upon their bodies. So if we think early, back during slavery, we think about Whipped Pete and the image of the African American man who has this crisscross kind of lattice pattern of scarring across his back. It's the first journalistic appearance of violence against a black person. And as we think, you know, throughout time, as we go through lynching photographs, or we go through the era of the civil rights movement, where imagery was very important to bring people into this fight, to galvanize them. And we see African Americans being tossed about by fire hoses and, you know, beaten in the streets by police, as John Lewis was, as he attempted to march for black enfranchisement. We have become so used to seeing that violence being meted out against African Americans that we've almost become numb to the fact that this is someone's child. This is someone's husband or wife or brother or sister. What started out as a really gallant, you know, valiant kind of effort to continue in the tradition of the civil rights movement and provide imagery to the fight quickly morphed into the public asking for more and more footage to show that they could get behind a particular case. That in itself, we didn't realize it at first, but now is a very racist act to say that only African Americans have to show or prove that they did not deserve their own killing in this way. And I think of all the times that violent deaths of white people have been scrubbed from the internet. And I wonder why African Americans haven't been given that same, you know, treatment, that same dignity.
You're saying that people of color essentially have now got to have a whole second set of evidence when they go into a courtroom, which whites don't have to have. But so here is the confusion. I can hear people saying, but wait a second, those fire hoses that I, as a white person, let's say, comfortably in my suburban home, saw for the first time, that was when that woke me up to what was going on in the civil rights movement in the 60s. The same as there are people this time around saying, when I saw that video, that horrendous video of George Floyd, that's when I really understood what people have been saying to me, that there's a different set of interactions with police when black men are involved, and that the playback of that video led to Derek Chauvin's conviction. Respond to that, that there's a feeling that that is how we got to that conviction and maybe are getting to a place where there will be more.
Absolutely. And I think that people have to remember that back in 1955, Mamie Till Mobley had a choice whether she wanted to share Emmett Till's lynching photographs. And she entrusted Jet Magazine to open the casket and show those pictures, which galvanized the civil rights movement. But I have to look at history and know that my ancestors also were very judicious about the use of those images. They didn't loop them in the way that we see today. We didn't even have 24-hour news networks back then. The news lasted 15 minutes. And so that's where our phrase 15 minutes of fame comes from, because John Lewis and people who worked with him knew that they had 15 minutes to make an appeal and that it better be compelling. But again, the public was not exposed to that on a 24-hour basis. The danger in doing that is in numbing people and in dehumanizing the victims.
Well, Professor, I'm also wondering, do you think that it might be having the opposite effect, that seeing these images constantly might be reminding people of color, yourself, this is what can happen? Much as the lynching photographs, you call upon the horrible history of lynching postcards that were passed around. And you point to the amendment to the 1873 Comstock Law, which banned these postcards celebrating lynching. Those postcards serve to remind black people that this could happen to you. Do you think in an odd way that these videos, which some have seen as liberating, taken by black bystanders, might be having the opposite effect of reminding black observers of what can happen?
Absolutely. And these videos in some circles function as lynching photographs for some people who would like to celebrate those kind of images. And I say that when I think of the fact that what began trending shortly after Mr. Floyd's death were images of people, white men, posed as Mr. Floyd and Mr. Chauvin down on the ground. And they said that they were Floyding, just as the Trayvon Martin meme trended back in 2012, where white teenagers said that they were Trayvoning and they lay down on the ground like him. And so in some circles, these are not liberatory videos. These are lynching photographs and a celebration.
You say today the 2005 Broadcast Decency Enforcement Law should be enacted. That levies fines against broadcasters for obscenities. And it came about, you remind us, after the Super Bowl nipplegate, when Justin Timberlake accidentally exposed Janet Jackson's breast. You question, if you think that's obscene, how do you think I feel about a video of a person being killed? That sounds like a snuff film. But do you really think that could ever happen, that, you know, broadcasters would be fined? Broadcasters who might think they're doing the right thing by, pardon the word, exposing things on these videos, that they should be fined?
Absolutely. And I think that we really have to ask the deeper question. The elephant in the room is that most people who feel like they need more and more video to prove or expose something that most people already know inherently believe that African Americans are criminal by nature, and that they need this kind of video to prove that there are exceptions to the rule. And so we really have to be honest about what kind of policing we want to get behind, instead of making the victim be the person who has to prove that they didn't deserve to die. And I think about all of the older videos that featured white people dying violently. For example, if I think about Daniel Pearl, or I think about the number of white people who were forced out of those buildings, 9/11, who largely were white, falling from the buildings. I think about being old enough in the newsroom to remember how vigorously we fought to keep that imagery, not only off of our channels and off of our websites, but scrubbing it from the internet. And I think that these are the kinds of gripes that I have with modern journalism, is that colleagues are rushing to the police said narrative. That humanizing element comes so much later rather than first. So a reliance upon the humanizing part of the reportage rather than the death is really what I'm calling for here. I'm calling for people who feel they need more videos and more proof to know that something horrible is going on, to really question why you're doing that.
You've given us a lot to think about. Alyssa Richardson, Associate Professor of Journalism at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School. We'll link you to her writing at herenow.org. Alyssa, Professor, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.